Okay, good evening to all of our friends at the Bulkley Valley and beyond. My name is Thomas Tom Roper, and I'm very excited to open my third radio show tonight with my guest and friend Pat Scott. Pat has been living in the Smithers in the same house for the better part of 60 years now. She has raised her family and contributed to her community tirelessly through her involvement in sports with the kids and her connection with the ACW, the Anglican Church Women. What I always like to find out from our residents is how they came to the Valley and why they stayed. And don't forget, we get to hear some of the songs that are part of their life, with a few of my favorites thrown in. And remember, if you can't catch us live on the show, it's always archived and available at any time on your computer at smithersradio.com. Click on the schedule in the upper left and scroll down to On the Ropes. So we are broadcasting on CICK Radio, 93.9 FM on your dial. We are broadcasting from the Kasia Territory, Gidimdam Clan, home of the Wet'suwet'en. Today is Monday, July the 15th, and it's been a hot one. So, Pat, welcome to the show.
Nice to be here.
We are you sure are looking good.
Thank you.
Yeah. Pat, you told me before, when we were sort of preparing for the show, is that you were born in Regina, Saskatchewan, and that was during the Dirty 30s. Can you expand on that a little bit for me, Pat?
Well, my mother came to this country from Belfast in 29 and then married, and I was born in 1933, and we stayed in Regina till about 38, I think it was 38, something like that, and then, you know, the Depression finally got, we were very fortunate. We moved to Cloverdale, and we looked after a farm. My dad looked after a farm for his immediate boss. So we were very, very fortunate in that sense. And then eventually, a few years later, we moved to Vancouver. My dad went to work for the Army in the old Vancouver Hotel. Oh. And he was an engineer. And we lived on 10th Avenue, just right next to Fairmont Exchange telephone office, right. Surprisingly enough. And then I actually in later life became a telephone operator. But anyway, and from there, my father died and my mother unfortunately married too quickly, and we moved to Port Alberni, which I hated. I shouldn't say it that way.
Yeah, now you mentioned that about Port Alberni, Pat, but I was thinking, you know, you did your schooling there, you were very, very, skipped a year. You ended up getting married there, so you had some good times in Port Alberni.
Oh, good time! Yeah. I mean, it's all meant to be, and there was good times. And then we moved from there to Nanaimo, and two of my first two children were born in Nanaimo.
Right.
And then my husband worked in the woods, and many had several different jobs. We had we had two children then, and then we moved to Nelson. And I started with the telephone company in Port Alberni in 1948.
Wow.
Oh, God, can you imagine? And then I was married in 50.
Right. And you were married at 17, Pat.
17.
That's fairly young.
Yeah. Well,
so there was a couple of things you liked about your husband to get yourself interested in getting married. And I've got a song coming up I just wanted to play. It's
okay.
Something that I've kind of liked, so We'll give that a try, okay?
Okay.
If you ask any girl from the parish around what pleases her most from her she'll say, I'm not sure that it's business of yours, but I do like to waltz with the log driver, for he goes whirling down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. He's whirling down and down Whitewater. A log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. the drive's nearly over, I like to go down and see all the lads as they work on the river. I know that come evening they'll be on the town, and we all love to waltz with the log driver, for he goes purling down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. He's purling down and down Whitewater. A log driver's waltz pleases girls completely. Both my parents I've had to give way and dance with the doctors and merchants and lawyers. Their manners are fine, but their feet are of clay, for there's none with the style of my log driver. For he goes whirling down and down Whitewater. That's where the log driver learns to step lightly. He's whirling down and down Whitewater. A log driver's waltz pleases girls completely.
Okay, Pat, we're back on, and I just had to throw that song in. I heard it a couple of years ago, and they've actually, CBC has made a little ditty out of it, and every now and then it'll come on, and it is the cutest little thing with these guys going down the river. And the dancing part is the part that got me, Pat, because you know George has been known to be a good dancer around town.
And I think so.
Yeah.
And that was one of the reasons I married him, too. He was handsome. And, and as you say, that one song that you've just played, we danced to that many, many times. And
did you know that song, Pat?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
So that song was actually written by Wade Hemsworth in 1979, and it was sung by the Swinging Bells of Newfoundland. So, so we got we've kind of got yourself working now at BC Tel. You started when you were only 15.
Yes.
And it's hard to believe that you were able to get a job at
that
young age.
I was very lucky.
Yeah.
Very lucky. At that time, you could work in the summer at 15, but I had a very good recommendation from my school counselor in Vancouver, Vancouver Tech, which is BCIT today. And she gave me very, very good. And I, to be quite honest with you, I was devastated. I gave up what I wanted to do. I knew where I was going.
Right.
And anyway, but anyway, and so I got on at 15, which I was very lucky.
Exactly. And then, so you were able to carry that with you, Pat. Like that went from Port Alberni over to Nanaimo. Did you work in Nanaimo a little bit too?
Yes, I worked in Nanaimo, and then I worked in Nelson, and then I worked in Chilliwack. I worked for a little bit of time in Langley, but then we moved to Chilliwack. There was a very short period in there, and from Chilliwack I came up here, and I worked in the telephone office till 1970.
Wow, that's hard to believe. That's hard to believe. And in the meantime, you had two children in Nanaimo.
Two in Nanaimo.
Two in Nelson.
Yeah.
And you continued to have more children, Pat.
Well, I lost a couple of I had two miscarriages, but then I ended up having in 1967. I always maintain that was my centennial project, was my first son.
Right.
And then the next year I had twins, which I didn't know I was going to have. Wow. I didn't know I was carrying twins. And unfortunately, only one of them lived. They were identical twin boys, and one only lived 15 hours, but The other one is my baby.
Yeah, and that's right.
He's 55 today.
Yeah. Still your baby. I met him the other day. Yeah. He seems like a real nice fella. So, Pat, like to get to Smithers when you were in Nelson, how did it come up that George was looking for?
Well, the thing is, we moved from Nelson down to Aldergrove for a very short period of time. His uncle had a business there, and he was going to help my husband get into business. Well, I think his uncle had ulterior motives.
Right.
And anyway, he did get into a business. He had a garage on the highway.
Right.
And he did that on his own. And then he had the opportunity to buy into a hotel here in Smithers.
How did that come up? That's the part
I'm
kind of curious.
Well, he was...
Was it in the paper, or did he
No,
have
no.
A...
It was... How can I say this? When we were in Nelson, my husband worked in the hotels.
Oh, okay.
In the beer
so
products.
He had some experience.
Because, well, we had 3 children at that time, and then we had 4.
So you had to have more than one job just to keep going.
Yes, we sure did.
It's crazy. Okay, Pat, well, that sounds like we'll work our way up country. I want to ask you some questions about that change, but I want to slip another song in right now.
Okay, thank you.
Here. This is one of our favorites, one of your favorites, and it's a song that just has so much, I don't know, it just has the inspiration to keep going.
Oh.
And everybody can listen to it at any time in their life and still like it. So let's give it a shot here. It's called What a Wonderful World by Louis Armstrong.
Oh, one of my favorites.
I see trees of green, red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. I see skies of blue, clouds of white, the bright blessed day, the dark sacred night, and I think to myself, what a wonderful world. The colors of the rainbow, so pretty in the sky, are also on the faces of people going by. I see friends shaking hands, saying, how do you do? They're really saying, I love you. I hear babies cry. I watch them grow. They're like much more. And I never knew. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world. Yes, I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
That is a pretty beautiful song, Pat. Now, I did a little bit of small research on each one of these songs, and this song was written by Bob Teal and George Weiss, and they actually specifically wrote it for Louis, because they figured he was one of these artists that could inspire people and bring different races together.
Yes, right.
Yeah. So he was an amazing man.
Yeah.
And he sang that song in 1967, so that was back a few years.
A few years.
Yeah. It's hard to believe the 60s are 50 years ago.
Well,
now,
57 actually. Yeah.
So that's kind of amazing. So Pat, just going back now, when we're talking about coming up to Smithers, And you and George actually bought the Bulkley Hotel.
We bought into the Bulkley Hotel.
Okay.
Our partner.
Right.
Angus Lutz was our partner.
Right.
And we're there till 70, and then we sold. And we actually were going to, he was going to do some relief work for hotels and that kind of thing. And it was me that, because I always, we were coming up, I made him promise me we'd go back to the Fraser Valley. But it was me that said, no, I didn't want to go back.
This is after the sale.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you guys had a choice of moving back to Vancouver,
you know,
if you want.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was me that turned around and, no, I didn't. Well, after you have two children and, you know, we were established here and the community was great.
Yeah. And you get to friends and you start fitting in.
Well, yes, we did.
You know, and one thing I wanted to ask you, Pat, like the difference in the weather from the Vancouver Island, and then you're coming up and you're getting 40 below back in those days.
It was quite a shock because I really wasn't used to driving in snow.
Yeah, yeah.
I remember the first Easter we had here, and, you know, it's really stupid how you do things. And my girls always got a new outfit for Easter.
Right.
White shoes, ridiculous.
Right.
And I did that, and I could not believe how stupid I was because it was so miserable. I mean, we ended up going to church with rubber boots on.
Right. Isn't that it?
But we learn.
You learn. We all learn as we're going along, right? No, that's good. So then from the hotel, now, George, you'd said to George, if you want to go back to the valley and get a job back there, you can commute. And you were going to stay.
Yeah.
So that must have got him thinking about maybe branching out into the restaurant business.
Well, no. He actually turned around and went into some heavy-duty equipment and graders and that kind of thing.
Right.
And he worked for the government for a while. And then he leased a farm and did a little bit of farming. And it was ridiculous. I can remember when it was in 1970-ish. Is when the mall was built.
Right.
And he came home one day and he said to me, I just looked at him. You know, I'm telling you, it's a wonder I didn't kill him. But he said, I think we're going to open up a little restaurant.
Right.
And I said, I have never done restaurant work in my life.
Right.
You know? And he said, well, we're going to. So I overheard him one time telling someone that, because he wasn't very, very well at that time. And he said, this was one way that if anything happened to him, that I could maintain the children because I had older children and then younger children.
Right, right.
And I thought to myself, but it turned out it was supposed to be,
and it turned out,
and I quite like that kind of thing. I'm a very social person.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
And then when there was lots of rules over there at the mall,
right.
You had to stay open when you couldn't close, you couldn't do this. There was a lot of rules, and I had an opportunity to buy into the Swiss Tea Room and the Food Barrel Deli, which I did.
Right,
and,
right.
Yeah, and it was a good move. It
that was
really
a really
good move.
Yeah.
And I had that up until 1997.
Right.
And that's when I retired.
Right. Well, I'd like to talk a little bit more about the Swiss Tea Room, Pat.
Yeah.
But let's put our third song in there and see how you like this particular fellow.
Okay.
I try to fit in a few Canadians as part of our show, and we've got Canadian crooners anybody else, you know. So I've got a guy here,
Anka.
Paul Anka.
Yeah.
And one of
I knew you were going to come up with that one.
One of his favorite his songs was "Put Your Head on My Shoulder."
Oh,
so I'm gonna just try that one right now.
You would have made me cry.
So, let's give that a go.
Put your head on my shoulder. That you love me too. Put your lips next to mine, dear. kiss me once, baby. Just a kiss goodnight, maybe. You and I will fall in love.
You and I will fall in love.
People say that love's a game. A game you just can't win. If there's a way, I'll find it someday, and then this fool will rush in. Put your head on my shoulder, whisper in my ear, to hear. Tell me that you love me too. Put your head on my shoulder, whisper in my ear, baby, words I want to hear. Put your head on my shoulder.
Okay, Pat, we're back. Now I just wanted to have a couple of words about Paul Anka. He was born in Ottawa in 1941.
And a Canadian.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
I mean, he was born in I believe he was born in Canada, but he was born of of Lebanese parents. Yeah,
that's right. Yeah, yeah, which was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And the one thing that I had read was he was a big teen idol. And when you go on to Spotify, they give you a little bit of rundown. He's actually right at the moment got 4 million followers. That's hard to believe.
You know,
people
that
are still following him. Yeah. And one of the little interesting facts that kind of struck me was that he was very popular in Finland.
And I didn't realize that.
Yeah, and so you'd wonder, you would think he'd be just Canadian or American, but it seems like he was on the top of the charts in
very
Finland.
Smooth.
Yeah,
very smooth.
So we're just going to take a minute, Pat, to have our station acknowledgement.
Okay.
And we are coming to you live tonight on CICK Radio, 93.9 FM on your dial. And we have a group of sponsors that help us along the way each year. And I'd like to just mention Farmers Market, Classic Sanitary, and BV's Farmers Market, and the BV Concert Association.
Good.
So just so that we'll have a little shout out for that. So Pat, if we keep sort of along our way when you were at the Swiss Tea Room, that's sort of where I got to know you a little more. And I had a real good friend of mine, Brenda Mallory, come down, and she was actually living up in Atlin, and then she came to Telqua, and I got to meet them because her husband was a good carpenter, and I was always looking for a carpenter.
Yeah.
And she set up kind of a gathering of her friends, and it seemed like they started at the Swiss Tea Room.
Yes, it did. She came in one day, and I had a few paintings in the tea room, Visserman, and I'm trying to think of the other one. Doesn't really matter now, but Visserman was big at that time.
Right.
And she asked me if she could put some of her paintings in. She was a wonderful painter.
Right.
And she actually was legally blind. Did you know that?
I knew that. Yeah, it was hard to believe.
And so anyway, we got talking, and just in passing, she mentioned she came from Port Alberni. And I said, oh, for heaven's sake. I said, I was married in Port Alberni. Well, actually, Alberni, but we lived in Port Alberni. And so we got chit-chatting back and forth, and she mentioned about her dad being a barber. And then my husband happened to come in, and we were, just
talking
conversation.
Around,
It'd be damned if her dad didn't cut when my husband worked in Port Alberni. He cut his hair.
No.
And George always wore a crew cut.
Right.
Wasn't
right.
everybody that could cut a hair crew cut.
No.
But, yeah, and so we really, yeah, we became very good friends, Brenda and Al.
Yeah, they're a very nice couple, and they
very,
were
very very.
They were very giving.
Yes, you extremely know, like, extremely so.
Like Al was one of these guys. I mean, I was always one to take advantage of the fact that he wouldn't overcharge you when he was working, and so. That kind of excited me because I was feeling like we always paid too much for everything, you know.
Yeah, that's true.
But he would do work for seniors and other people and not charge them at all. You know,
no, he was very good to seniors. Yeah. And he was quite an artist. I have a beautiful ibis that he carved.
A what?
Ibis.
Oh.
And it was absolutely, and I just love that because I can just run my hands over it. It's so smooth.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's one thing that whenever I touch it, I think of Al.
Yeah, that's
and then,
really
of course,
nice.
I have a lot of Brenda Mallory paintings that my downfall.
Right.
But that's okay.
I thought shoes were your downfall.
Pardon?
I thought shoes.
That is another thing. Did you have to bring it up? I have far too many shoes, but I do have a phobia. I could say addiction.
Yeah, a little bit of addiction. No. Yeah, which
there's
is
not too many colors I don't have.
Yeah. So, Pat, going back to the Swiss Tea Room now, you had the deli in there, too.
Yeah, we did.
And did you go out of the deli and stay with the tea?
Well, what happened was that, you know, when the supermarket started to bring their delis in, my son-in-law, who happened to be assistant manager at Safeway, he said to me, Mommy said, you know, I think if you're smart, you'd get... Okay, we also had another deli in town, too.
Right, right.
And so, anyway... I thought, well, it's a good thing. So I had an opportunity to sell all my equipment and just keep the tea room, which I really, really loved.
Right.
And I probably, if George hadn't gotten sick, I probably would have stayed on for a while. I mean, I'm too old now.
Yeah,
but
well,
I would
no,
have stayed was, on for a little bit longer because I really missed it. I missed the social. I loved the people.
Yeah.
And It was
very sweet, Pat. It was a very good situation. Now, Pat, in life, we've got all the ups and we have the downs that go along with it. And the one story you told me about when your daughter was sick, and I found that quite emotional.
It's still very.
It's very raw at all times.
It is very raw.
You can't get over it.
Yeah, I mean, she was 26, and when she was diagnosed, it was quite a shock because
the doctor
at that time said to me, this isn't a kind of cancer that young people get, it's what old people get.
Right.
So she had a bone marrow transplant, which her older sister supplied and it was successful.
Right.
She lived 75 days. If she could have made it to 100, the doctor told me, you know, I don't know what kind of life she would have had, but she would have made, but it was the graft versus host that killed her. But this community.
Now you mentioned that you went down there, Pat.
I did. Yeah. And my daughter run the show until I was with her for nearly 3 months. And when she was dying, we were going to close the tea room up.
Yeah.
And so everyone could say goodbye. And my friends and my customers, they said, no, you're not going to close up. We'll run it. So we had a young lady who worked with Terry, and she took over that. And my cousin in Vancouver couldn't believe it. She said, you mean to tell me that people that you deal with every day and your friends, they took over your store? I said, yes, I did.
That is just completely
I mean, that's the kind of community
that we're living in.
This is what this is.
When you talk about it, I always feel a bit emotional about it, Pat, because it is like the both sides of it, the sickness and then the community stepping in to help.
Yeah,
I always find this community that is it's there to step up for us.
Well, it was, and as you say, it's as hurtful today as it was that.
Yeah.
It was the hardest 3 days of my husband and I's life is to see her. She was so strong. And finally,
it's just
we told her, it was, you know,
we'll
her,
see
her dad and I said to her, you know, it's time to let go. And it was really hard.
Yeah, extremely
really hard.
Well, Pat, I've got a song that I wanted to play after that time, and it's one of the another very enduring time of our era by Nat King Cole.
Oh gosh!
And it was remastered in 1991, so his daughter could sing with him on the song. So it's actually quite amazing that they were able to put that together.
It still is, and it was at the time.
Yeah,
I think I have a record at home still that with that on it, and
it's a beautiful song.
And PBS sometimes will bring those kinds of things back, and they're the best shows.
Best shows ever.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's give it a shot here and see how it sounds coming from CICK Studio.
Wow.
Live.
That's what you are.
Unforgettable, though near or far.
Like a song of love that clings to me, how the thought of you does things to me. Never before has someone been more
unforgettable in every way,
and forevermore,
and forevermore.
That's how you'll stay. That's why, darling, it's incredible that someone so unforgettable thinks that I am unforgettable too.
Great slow dance.
Oh, my goodness, Pat. That song will live forever.
Yes,
it will. It's just beautiful. Yep. And the interesting part about that song, it was written by Irving Gordon. back in 1951 when Nat King Cole sang it. And then after Nat had passed away, that's when Natalie, his daughter, remastered the song with her technicians in 1991.
Yeah.
To put them singing together. It's extremely emotional.
It was, extremely, extremely. Yeah.
So, Pat, going back, now you had mentioned that you had completed 20-plus years of service with BCTEL.
Yep.
So you finished your career in Smithers.
Yep.
So you're saying if we go back 20 years of that career, that was the time when you had to pull the cord, stick it in the hole, and move it around. People would be talking to you. You had party lines that were fighting.
Yeah.
It must have been a fun time, actually.
It was an interesting time. Like, I went through the different phases where a lot of people, there were rural lines.
Right.
And so you'd ring a code, and after maybe two or three times, nobody answers. Somebody would answer and say, "Oh, they went to town."
Right.
Or they, you know, they're whatever. So, I mean, it was sort of like having a message service in a sense, kind of an idea. And then, of course, we progressed to the dial and whatever type of thing. But it got so that telephone operators were pretty versatile.
Yeah,
we could do more than one thing at once, and you answered with the back cord and you rang with the front cord.
Right.
And and then of course long distance was when you went through to a New York City at one time, way back when, and that's where you did the overseas calls.
Oh, okay.
But you could ring anything in North America. But if you went to Europe, then you had to go through to New York City operator,
right?
And then she connected you from there. It was really interesting.
I can imagine that was very interesting. And so you decided to retire? Like, was it just something you had enough of?
No. The office here closed in 1970.
Okay. 70.
Yeah, and so there was no more office here, and everything went to Prince George, and then. You know, I mean, things have changed.
Always changes. Lots of changes.
Kind of an
Pat.
Idea.
Yeah.
But it was a great life. It wasn't what I planned on.
My
life. But the thing is, it worked out for me.
Yes, and I mean, it's still working out for you, Pat. which is pretty amazing. So, as time kept marching on, then George became ill, and he passed in 2010. Had you sold the tea room by that time?
Oh, yes. When he had his first heart attack, I had a small accident about a quarter of a block from home, and I didn't realize at that time how tired I was, and yet George was very, very independent. He did, you know, he was a diabetic, and he did his own shots and that kind of thing. But, you know, it does play on you.
Yeah.
And, so anyway, that's when I had been approached if I was interested in selling, and I said at that time I wasn't. And then when that happened, I decided to. And I missed it.
It. It's a very social interaction.
For me, anyway, it was,
No, that's not. So you didn't go home and start watching TV and never leave the house. You had other things that started popping up in your life, Pat.
I got involved in the museum about 19, while I was still in the tea room, actually, and I've been on that board for, I think it's nearly 30 years. It's quite a long time anyway.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was involved in minor hockey and figure skating and that kind of thing, because that's what my kids did.
Exactly. And don't forget the WC?
Exactly. When my boys got a little bit older, I was able to participate a little bit more in the church, and which I have done for 40-some-odd years.
Yeah. So AWC is the Anglican Church Women.
Yeah.
Right. And you're connected now with the thrift store. And
I do my
your time
my
there.
Turn yeah. kind of an idea. Yeah.
Almost like hockey. Remember we had to do that that concession?
Well, exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do.
That's what you do. Yeah, exactly. You know, it's all going good. So after that, it seems that you'd come up with another hobby. And it's this genealogy, Pat. I find it quite amazing that you're able to move yourself from, you know, one sort of hobby or something to do or your job, and then you you keep rolling. I like that about you, Pat.
Well,
I really
the thing
do
is that I hope that that I can keep rolling, right. Kind of an idea. But I was always interested in my family, but I didn't have the time. And it was amazing the things that, especially on my father's side, I was quite shocked to find out that he was from a family of, he was a third family.
Right.
And I didn't realize that. And it was funny how the information, a friend of my mother's side was doing some research on her side, that Michael Rath, and he sent me some information, and it was, I didn't realize it.
Right.
It was a couple of weeks later that I'd looked at this one, and here it was my dad.
What?
And my mother was born in Belfast, and my father was born in London, in Suffolk, actually.
Okay.
Anyway, and I thought, whoo.
Wow.
So my grandfather was married, had a child, and obviously it looks as if his wife died. My grandmother was married and had two children, and her husband deserted her, and she met my grandfather,
right.
And they got married and had a third family.
Wow.
So, but what a shock.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So somehow you made a decision that you were going to go out there, out to Belfast in England,
yeah.
By yourself.
Yeah.
And people like your family thought that maybe you shouldn't be going by yourself. You should be going with a friend or one of them. But
well, it was in 2012, and I decided that I was going to do this. And so I made the arrangements within a week or so. And about 2 days before I was going to leave, I let my family know. And of course, my my sons especially were just horrified that I was going to be going to London all by myself. And
right.
I said that I couldn't do it. I said, "Well, I'm going to do it," and I did do it.
Right.
And yes. I had a friend who offered to go with me, but I said to her, "Thank you very much, but I don't want to be. This is for me."
Yeah.
And I went to London and walked on the streets where my dad was born, went to the church where he was baptized, went to the funeral home where my grandfather was buried. Then I flew to Belfast and did the same thing. I didn't get to any of the cemeteries there because I didn't have that much information.
Right.
But
right.
I did walk on the streets where my mother was born. And beautiful St. Patrick's Cathedral was where she was baptized. And it was, I just can't, it's hard to explain. It was just absolutely awesome.
Yeah,
and
it's just totally amazing.
It really, really was.
Totally amazing. Well, Pat, I was going to try and slip one more song in. We're doing pretty good on our time here.
Okay.
And I've got a song that it's an older song, but my parents were a little bit older than you, but we had these parties downstairs. They really liked to dance too.
Yeah.
And this song here really has always stuck with me as one of the interesting ones of that time. So it's out of the 60s, and it's sung by a guy called Bobby Darin. So we'll just play that little song for us.
The shark, babe, has such teeth, dear, and it shows them pearly white. Just a jackknife has old Maggie, babe, and it keeps it out of sight. You know when that shark bites with its teeth, babe, scarlet billows start to spread. Fancy gloves, though, wears old Maggie Heath, babe, so there's never, never a trace of red. Now on the sidewalk, Sunday morning, lies a body just oozing life. And someone sneaking round a corner, could that someone be Mac the Knife? There's a tugboat down by the river, don't you know, where a cement bag just drooping on down. Oh, that cement is just, it's there for the weight you dare. Five will get you 10 old Mackies back in town. Not to hear about Louis Miller, he disappeared, babe, after drawing out all his hard-earned cash. And now Maggie, he spins just like a sailor. Could it be our boy's done something rash? Abba, ho, ho, yes, a tawdry. Wound is not a linya. And Lucy Brown. Oh, the line forms on the right, babe. Now that Maggie's back in town. I said, Jenny Diver, whoa, Suki Tawdry, look out to Miss Lottie Linya and old Lucy Brown. Yes, that line forms on the right, babe. Not that Maggie's back in.
What a song that is, Pat.
Yeah. What an era.
Oh, my goodness. It's just the big band is really putting up.
Oh, the big band, It'll never die.
I don't think it ever will.
I don't think so.
There's so much there to enjoy, you know. Yeah. And the strange thing about that song, I mean, I love the music of it.
Yeah,
but it actually was written by a couple of German fellows, Kurt Weill and Bertolt Brecht, who was a playwright.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
In 1928.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah, so they set it up for their Three Penny Opera, and it's a ballad glorifying this English highwayman who wouldn't mind taking your money and giving you a knife every now and then. So it's not really a nice song
on
itself, but just the music is
incredible. But
the
music is great.
Incredible.
And it tells the story.
Yeah, exactly. So, Pat, just one more item that I wanted to bring up was this, the Red Hat Society. I just think that is an incredible group of people that get together that just believe in having fun, really, is what it is.
Yeah, exactly.
Is it an international society?
Oh, yes. It's all over the world. It was. I mean, maybe not so much now, but it definitely was.
Yeah.
And there was a lady, and I can't remember her last name, but Helen was her first name. She worked at Safeway, and it was her sister in the Okanagan that got her to start it here.
Right.
She was here for a very short period of time, and she started it, and there was I'm just trying to think. There was myself and Audrey Wall, Pat McCammon, Betty Williams, Betty Kennedy. There was a whole slew of us that started, and then it got bigger and bigger.
Yeah.
And we had some really, really good times. We went to Terrace. We went to.
You went on the train, Pat?
We went on the train, And they had the Red Hatters there put on a gala.
Oh, yeah.
And we went to Prince George several times, Prince Rupert several times, Kitimat Terrace. And, some of the best times we had was at Fraser Lake.
Right.
It's a small little community, but they know how to party.
Yeah.
And we
had
a really, really good time. And then we put a big gala on here in the old Hudson Bay. And it was called Rubber Boots for Dancing, based
on the book
by Ernie Han.
Right.
Yeah, Ernie
Han. Well, Ernie's in the book, but I don't think he wrote it. Remember there's another lady that wrote that book. Anyways,
Brigands. Bergon Girls.
Yeah,
I'm sorry, my mistake. Yeah, but we all got fancy rubber boots.
Right.
I still have mine.
Right.
And we had the best time. And I think everybody, a lot of the other Red Hat chapters would say, when are you going to do another one?
But, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work.
But we're down to, we started, I think we had about 30 ladies at one time, and now we're down to about 12 to 14.
Right.
You know, getting older,
yeah,
getting sick, whatever.
Everything changes
thing.
As
but
we
go. But we still have a good time, and we love to get our red hats on, and some of us have far too many red hats,
like me. Right.
But we always go out for dinner and have a glass of wine, and we just do fun things.
Yeah, exactly, Pat. Exactly. Well, you know, Pat, the greatest part of a person's life as they grow older is the ability to keep making our life interesting and finding ways to help others, you know. And and you do that, Pat.
I try.
And I believe that's one of your greatest qualities, really.
Well, thank you, but I just try.
Yeah.
I do what I can.
So I saw you a couple of months ago at the seniors rally.
Yes.
You're involved in that. You're still continuing with your genealogy. You still have your red hats to keep yourself, have a little bit of fun time. So it's really amazing. And I wanted to also, I was very glad to hear that you passed your medical so that you can still drive.
I did. I'm still able to drive, yeah. God willing.
Yeah.
As I say, we'll see, kind of an idea. And as I say, I'm still very involved in the museum. And I just wish people would realize that what a wonderful gem the museum is, because Ernie Hand started it.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, I think of that song that Mark Perry sang, "This town was built on the backs of the people who lived here," and how true that was, you know. And people like Ernie Hand, who started in a little room in the old municipal hall,
right,
and then it moved over here. And, you know, it would be nice if we, I mean, as long as I've been involved, we've always been trying to build a bigger museum.
Facility, yeah.
But it's not viable, kind of an idea.
Yeah. No, it's really amazing what people can do when they get together to do it.
Yeah.
So, Pat, I'd like to close out the program with another timely favorite. This one is Frank Sinatra's hit.
"Be Still My Beating Heart."
Man, it's just a real sweet song. Now, the interesting thing about this song, I guess, after Pat played it, or Frank played it for, you know, sang it so many times, because everybody loved it.
Yeah.
He started to not like it anymore, because he felt that it was a little bit too aggressive on the fact that it was all about him.
Oh.
But it's a beautiful song.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing, the song was written by Paul Anka.
Yes, it was. Yeah. So and this was my way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'll just play it.
Without you telling me, I knew that's what. And you know what? If we could all do exactly what he did, try to do it your way.
Try to do it, and try to enjoy life as you're going, you know? So let's give this a run.
Okay.
"And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain. My friend, I'll say it clear, I'll state my case, of which I'm certain. I've lived a life that's full, I traveled each and every highway and more, much more than this. I did it my way. Regrets I've had a few, but then again, too few to mention. I did what I had to do and saw it through without exemption. I planned each charted course, each careful step along the byway, more, much more than this. I did it my way. Yes, there were times, I'm sure you knew, when I bit off more than I could chew. But through it all, when there was doubt, I ate it up and spit it out. I faced it all and I stood tall and did it my way. I've loved, I've laughed and cried, I've had my fill, my share of losing, and now, as tears subside, I find it all so amusing to think I did all that. And may I say, not in a shy way, oh no, oh no, not me, I did it my way. For what is a man, what has he got, if not himself, then he has not to say.
I don't care that Frank was getting tired of it. It's a beautiful song.
It is. He did lots of silly, probably things, kind of an idea, but he did lots of good things, too. I mean, he was a kind man, but he did it his way.
Yeah, you've got to give him that credit. Yeah. So when I got a little bit of information on that from Wikipedia, they were stating that the song was called Comme d'habitude. It was a French song written by a Frenchman, Jacques Revaux.
Oh.
And then Paul Anka was traveling in France at the time and heard it.
Oh.
And ended up buying the rights to the song.
Oh, for heaven's sake, so, I didn't realize
yeah,
that.
And so when he brought it back to the United States, Frank and him had been talking. Frank was had made a decision he was going to retire.
Yeah.
So then Paul wrote this song, rewrote the lyrics of this song, and I thought it really fit well into Frank's life and our lives.
We all have regrets of things that we maybe didn't do, but, you know, you do, I always look at it this way, you try to do the best you can.
Yeah.
And you can't do anything more than that.
No, I think
if you make a few mistakes, well,
that's part of life.
That's
part of life, Pat. Well, thank you very much, Pat. It's been a real pleasure in talking with you, and interesting learning a little bit more about your life in Smithers. I hope that you can keep having fun. I really do, Pat.
Thank you for having me. And I must say that you and I talked about music, but you picked the right ones. The right ones. And it just brought back so many memories for me.
Oh, I'm good. Lots I'm really memories. Happy about that, Pat. Now, I just like in closing, I didn't do all the picking. I have actually my wife is sort of my sound technician, Sarah. And I also want to thank Spotify for their access to the songs and Wikipedia for the bio information.
Yeah.
And I've got my big, of course, thank you to CICK, which is 93.9 on your dial and your FM dial. And my our intern, Faith Fair, was always there for my tech support. And so my last thank you and not least thank you is my listeners. And I really hope that you'll be able to tune in next program, which are going to be on Monday, July the 29th. We are on a 2-week rotation, which is quite nice. And it'll be at 6 p.m. And Faith and I are going to go down to Barrett Hat in Houston. And we're going to interview Frank McDonald. And he's one of the founders and sort of the workers of that area. They have a group there called Maurice Rec Outdoor Society.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got trails and they've got a gazebo that they've built. And then they have this little Lake Johnson Lake, which is just loaded with different types of birds.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so we're going to try and tape that show and then come back and see if we can remix it, put some songs of Frank's in there, and have ourselves by our fourth radio program.
Good.
So that's all we got going for now. I'd like to say this is Tom Roper, and we're signing off for now, and we're going to catch you on the flip side.
Good.
All right, Pat, give her one of those.